Morning, everyone. Resurrection Lord's Day. This is what it was all about. The Old Testament was pointing to was Christ, right? His resurrection from the dead. That's what makes this all possible for you and I. We are running through the tabernacle and the Christian study, making sure that we understand all the things that had to do with the tabernacle. Were really nothing more than a foreshadow or a type of the true eternal things that God wanted us to understand, those key principles that were going to be revealed in the tabernacle system, sacrificial system and all that. And making sure that we understand properly who Christ is, who we are. We know God's purpose in that. Do we understand our purpose? That's really what it comes down to. Just as a reminder, turn over to 1 Peter 2. Verses 4 and 5, just to kick it off this morning. Just a reminder what Peter in the Spirit said to the church. And coming to him, Christ Jesus, as to a living stone rejected by men, but choice and precious in the sight of God, you also as living stones are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. We're going to be talking about some of these things this morning as we continue on in our study of the burnt offering, the whole burnt offering. But notice here, this is a reference right directly back to what the Jewish individual in particular would understand concerning the temple system with the stones that comprise the temple. And not just stones now, we are living, right? And we're what comprises this spiritual house, which the temple was also called the house. You can prove that easily, all right? And for a priesthood to offer up what? Spiritual sacrifices. For what reason? It's acceptable to God. So this is why we go through the tabernacle system. This is why we stop and slow down when we start talking about the sacrifices. We're supposed to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God. So those Old Testament sacrifices would have something they'd be communicating. Would you agree? Yeah, I think so. So it's important that we understand. So again, we've done the sin and the guilt offering. And I made sure you guys understood that the sin was to restore a broken fellowship with God. And the focus there was the penalty in the sin offering. There's a penalty. Separation. God, from the very early stages of His revelation to us, as has been recorded, separation. The day you eat of that tree that you decide you're going to rebel against me, here's the penalty. Separation. So the sin offering focused on the penalty. The guilt offering focused on the price. The price that had to be paid. So you look at the guilt offerings, and it's usually an individual thing, where the sin offering could be individual or community. I'm going to just use those terms loosely. Congregational. Alright? The guilt would focus on what you had to do, the price you had to pay individually to be restored. And a lot of times, not a lot, but it was some of them, there was a 20% on top of that. So there's a cost. There's a penalty, and then there's a price. You know? Just like in the National Football League, they've got rules now where if you hit quarterbacks, you know, or you hit other, you know, defenseless receivers, you know, basically can't protect themselves, there's a penalty. They throw the flag, 15 yards, you know, or wherever the point of the penalty was that the offense moves the ball up there, and that's the price on a team basis, the penalty and the price the team is going to pay. But a lot of times an individual then is fined by the commissioner of the NFL X amount of dollars. So there was a penalty, there was a price. I thought that'd be a good way. I know the ladies are going, still don't get it. But most ladies, forgive me. But it's a good representation, as good one as I can think of right now, because they do a lot of that in the National Football League. So there's a penalty and a price. I just want to make sure you guys understand that. And that has to do with when the fellowship has been broken. So you'll hear those two offerings referred to as the cleansing offerings. And the first three that we've begun to look at, starting with the whole burnt offering here in Leviticus chapter 1, and we'll talk about the meal offering. We're going to probably talk about that last. We'll go to the peace offering, which is in Leviticus 3, after we get done with the whole burnt offering. Those are the three offerings that have to do with people in fellowship with God or having moved into fellowship with God, like the nation of Israel as a whole. So they're called consecration offerings. Consecrated to Christ, set apart to Christ, holy. All these things mean basically the same thing. Okay? So that's why there's that importance in there. So we'll go back. We're going to actually look at the beginning of Leviticus 1, where it gives a definition to burnt offering, the things that are required, and pick it up from there, and we'll start to break this down a little bit. Then we'll look at some of the passages that have to do with the burnt offering. Last week we talked about the burnt offering was the oldest offering placed before God or offered to God. And it goes back and predates the law. It actually started with Noah's offering when he came off the ark. And it wasn't a sin offering. It was a burnt offering that rose as a fragrant aroma to God to say, thanks, you know. I'm in fellowship with you. I just saw everybody that wasn't get taken out. Thank you. I appreciate I'm in, you know, I've been consecrated, set apart from you, you know, and I am in fellowship with you, covenant with you, communion with you. On into Genesis 22, when Abraham took Isaac up, you know, willingly offering up his son, and Isaac also, I believe, is definitely old enough to know what's going on and allowed himself to be laid down on that altar. Okay, now, and Hebrews says that Abraham knew that God had promised through Isaac his descendants would come, and ultimately the Messiah would come through that, through the descendants of Isaac. So Abraham understood, even if I kill him, God's going to raise him back up. Abraham had a resurrection faith, but we forget about Isaac. Now, do you think Abraham never told Isaac who he was or what God had promised through him? Of course he did. Through you, God has told me. Through you, Isaac. Through you. So when Isaac's ready to lay down there on that altar, it sure sounds like Isaac being placed as that offering on the altar understood as well, even though Hebrews doesn't say this, understood as well that he would be resurrected. All foreshadows of who? Christ Jesus. He knew he was going to be resurrected. Alright, so, and today is the day that that fulfillment of all those prophecies we observe, according to the calendar, the day that Christ came out of the tomb, and those fulfillment, or those prophecies were realized, fulfilled. See? So, he laid himself down for us. Let's go to Leviticus 1, if you're not there. If you are, great. I'm just getting there. Do we have any comments or questions or need for clarification on the other stuff that we've talked about so far? Please, I beg you, I beseech you. If you're not understanding this, this is the time to ask the question, and there's nothing in this that's going to be considered a dumb or a stupid question. Please ask. The goal of this class is to help you understand this stuff, not to somehow prove to you that I'm so wonderfully knowledgeable. If my class does not edify or equip you, I have failed. It doesn't matter how much information I've passed on. If I can't make this connect with you, I've failed. So please, if there are questions, you need clarification, please ask. All right? Ladies, if you have a husband or a gentleman that you think could speak well for you or represent your question correctly, please ask them to ask me. Okay? I want you guys to understand this. That is the goal of this class, that you understand this. There's tons of information. I could bog you down with it, and you guys would go, I got nothing out of that. What I want you to have is a thorough understanding of what this means concerning Christ and you. So please, again, I'm going to beg you one more time. I'm going to beseech you. If you're not clear on this, please ask the question. Okay? John, thank you. Okay, hang on.
Could you clarify one more time when what offerings were just a male lamb?
Just a male lamb? Mm-hmm.
Burnt offering and stuff?
Yeah. No, but which ones were only a male lamb, where other ones could have been a bull or a goat?
Yeah, we'll look in the... I'm going to go through some of that.
Okay.
You want to be
No, that's a good question. I think I mentioned that when you look it up, as a matter of fact, John, I would like you to, do you have your phone with you? Look that up. Okay? I want to come to you for a couple of passages. Is that okay? Can you look it up? Male lamb. A male lamb. And we'll look at that. Okay? We'll actually look at some of those passages. Okay? I told you it was interesting when you look at it. There's only certain types of animals that are offered. Just want to let you know, by the way, when we get to the peace offering, both male and female are acceptable animals. For those of you that think this whole system was male-oriented, no. I think there's a reason in that, obviously. All right, so let me get back to Leviticus 1 while you're looking that up, and then I'll call in you in a few minutes here, okay? Okay. Leviticus 1. Let's talk about the burnt offering. Then the Lord called to Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when any man of you brings an offering to the Lord, you shall bring your offering of animals from the herd or the flock. If his offering is a burnt offering from the herd, he shall offer it, a male without defect, he shall offer it at the doorway of the tent of meeting, that he may be accepted before the Lord. And he shall lay his hand on the head of the burnt offering, that it may be accepted for him to make atonement on his behalf. And he shall slay the young bull before the Lord, and Aaron's sons, the priests, shall offer up the blood and sprinkle the blood around on the altar that is at the doorway of the tent of meeting. He goes on to discuss how he's going to burn it and cut it, and the sons of Aaron are going to be responsible for that. They'll arrange it, do all that. Now, verse 10, but if his offering is from the flock of the sheep or of the goats for a burnt offering, he shall offer it a male without defect. And he shall slay it on the side of the altar northward before the Lord, and Aaron's sons of priests shall sprinkle his blood around on the altar. And it's going to follow the same process, and it's going to go to the birds. Turtle dove, pigeons, same thing, nipping of the neck, what it's going to do. Okay? All right, John, do you have male lamb there? You have a couple of them? Yes, you do. So let's see what your first couple are.
Exodus, your lamb shall be an unblemished male 1 year old. You shall take it from the sheep or the goats.
What passage is that?
12:5.
Okay. Exodus 12:5. And then Leviticus?
9:3.
Right.
10,
you're looking
for?
Nope. We're going to read a few of them. And so you read the first one, right? 9:3 in Leviticus?
I didn't read that.
But you hit the Exodus 23, right?
Yeah.
Let's go back to Exodus 23 first. 23. Exodus chapter 23.
I guess I read 12:5.
Oh, you read 12:5? Yeah, that's the Passover lamb. Right? I think we... Okay, so that's the first time male lamb, Passover lamb, male. In reference to today, we could all say duh, right? Male lamb. Didn't you say Exodus 23 as well, though? Pardon me? Okay, I apologize. I heard 23. All right. And then you had Leviticus 9, correct? Give me the verse, John. Leviticus 9:3. Okay. Said, Darren, take for yourself, we're going to be in verse 2, a calf, a bull for a sin offering, a ram for a burnt offering, both without defect, and offer them before the Lord. Then to the sons of Israel you shall speak, saying, take a male goat for a sin offering, and a calf and a lamb, both 1 year old, without defect, for a burnt offering. So you got the Passover lamb, and you got the burnt offering as male. What's the next one you got there, John? 13:10? 14:10. Okay. And this is, we kind of covered it. It's in the cleansing of the leper. We went back through this, and I told you that this is, if you look at the process of the ordination of the priest and the cleansing of the leper, they're very, very similar. Very, very similar. On the eighth day, he is to take two male lambs without defect and a yearling ewe, lamb without defect, and 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour. This is for the cleansing of the leper. Next, John. Right, 23:12. Huh?
You're looking for 23, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the law of the religious festivals. Verse 10, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land which I am going to give to you and reap its harvest, there you shall bring in the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest, and he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord for you to be accepted on the day after the Sabbath. The priest shall weep. What's the day after the Sabbath? Sabbath is the seventh, right? So what follows the seventh day? The first day on a weekly basis. Let me clarify. You guys, sometimes I look out there and see you like, frozen. How many days in a week?
Seven.
All right. If the Sabbath is the seventh day, what's the next day in the next new week? First. Somebody said Sunday. Hello. That's fine. First day of the week. Okay. Just. He shall wave the sheaf before the Lord for you to be accepted. You notice this terminology showing up, to be accepted. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now on the day when you wave the sheaf, you shall offer a male lamb, 1 year old without defect, for a burnt offering to the Lord. So usually you're going to see the male lamb, other than on Passover, is typically going to be offered as a burnt offering. So you want the list of references, go to Mr. Hahn and get them. Check it out, see how often that happens. Male lamb, burnt offering. That has something to do with Jesus Christ. Not only is there a Passover lamb, but he was a burnt offering. So, back to Leviticus 1. Thank you, John, for the question. Okay.
So, I'm trying to take my mind back to something from last week. Did you say last week that so burnt offering, you can do with male lamb, but sin offering and guilt offering were not male lamb, right? Is that the...
But male and female can be offered.
Okay.
In peace offerings and in sin offerings.
Okay.
And I believe in guilt offerings.
Oh, okay.
That's in general.
No, I'm just.
Okay. What I was trying to get is that in the burnt offering, which is a consecration offering, I'm going to expand on that a little bit more on the burnt offering, everything. Maybe this will help. You still look like you got a furrowed brow, like there's.
I misunderstood something about the male lamb too from last week.
Well, what'd you misunderstand? Let's get it out there. Huh?
You made it sound like
only certain sacrifices that could be. The ones that is most frequently solely a male lamb is the burnt offering. That was what I was getting at.
Okay.
Yeah.
Luke heard the same way, I
think. Yeah. Now the male lamb is offered in other things, but where it's almost exclusively offered is in the burnt offering. Yes, I did make it sound that way. Thus the question. Yes. If you look at it, other than the Passover, and look at it, yes. And we can go back to the sin and the guilt offerings and what's able to be offered in that. And you'll see that the male lamb typically is not involved in those. It's involved in the burnt offering. But sometimes people read it together and it seems like the male lamb is going back to the sin offering. But what it's doing is it's laying out the progression of offerings that would be made. Sin or the guilt would be handled, then the male lamb, and it's all kind of thrown together. And people think, well, the male lamb's offered as part of it. No, it's still the burnt offering. Okay? So you got to pay close attention and understand the principles that have been laid down first. Otherwise, it'll seem like that. Okay, Mr. Wilson.
One thing that I think came out really clear last week that I think is good for us to remember and what really you drove home last week, and I just think to catch us up for our questions that are varied off, that the sin offering, the guilt offering, that stuff really had to be dealt with, the price had to be paid, etc., before the burnt offering could be made and acceptable to God. And I think that was really the main point and the huge relevant point for all of us to take home from that.
Yes. So can you offer your body as a holy and living sacrifice if you haven't dealt with the sin issue I think I talked about? So can anybody really still in sin offer themselves as an acceptable sacrifice? Remember, I touched on that in 1 Peter 2, because that's, if you were paying attention to what I read in Leviticus 1 there, part of it was he presents this burnt offering what? So that it would be acceptable to God. Okay, and what does Romans 12, 1 and 2 say? Present your bodies as a holy and living sacrifice, right? Acceptable to God. You know, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. But yes, John, I did say that it's burnt offerings, male lamb, other than the Passover, where it was a male lamb.
So the male lamb was not in the sin offering?
No. Well, not that I can recall, John. Not that I can recall, no. Right. If you go back and look at the sin offerings, what can be offered, and the guilt offerings, okay, that's going to be in 4, and then you're going to have 5 and 6, first 7 verses of 6 are going to talk about the guilt offering. So you can go back and look at that. Are we ready? Okay. Yeah. It's okay. It's fine.
Leviticus 4, verse 32. But if he brings a lamb as his offering for a sin offering, he shall bring it a female without defect.
Thank you. Okay. Any others? Good question, John. I really was. I did make that statement with the hope you guys would check it out, and I knew you would, John. I'm serious. I knew he would go. All right, let's see if this guy's right. So, again, when I say as far as I know, I'm just telling you from what the Scripture says, I don't know of any male ever being offered. Okay? So, that's my answer. Now, did somebody improperly offer one at some point? No, who knows? All right. Here we go. Chapter 1. Can we go back to chapter 1? All right. I had a whole bunch of stuff in my head I was going to do in an order I was going to do it, and it's all discombobulated now. So hang with me as I get my brain going back in the right direction. All right. Let's see. Okay. Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when any man of you brings an offering to the Lord. Okay. Voluntary. You notice it says, when any man. So when you look under the law, when it talks about there's a lamb to be offered in the morning and a lamb to be offered in the evening, that's separate, brethren, from what the individual would bring. Do you understand that? Do you understand what I'm saying? Under the law, we're going to look at where were the burnt offerings? When did they have to be offered? Well, there'd have to be one in the morning and the one in the evening. That's in a general sense representing for the congregation of Israel, under the law. Here it says, if anyone brings. This is a voluntary. All three of the consecration sacrifices or offerings, brethren, were voluntary. Voluntary. Sin offerings, guilt offerings were mandatory. You got to do this. So a burnt offering, a meal offering, sometimes called a meat offering in some of the other older translations, King James and others, and the peace offering were voluntary. When a man brings his offering. By the way, that word offering there in the Hebrew, anybody have any idea what that word is? It's Corban. You ever hear Jesus talk about Corban? Of course you have. Right? All Corban means, you know what that means in the Hebrew, that word? It means to bring near. Something that brings near. Now think about the sacrificial system, the whole routine they had to do. In the east gate, facing the altar, present the animal, right? What was that offering doing? The Israelite was moving from outside the courtyard into the courtyard, and what was he doing? He was drawing near through that offering, wasn't he? Drawing near. So that's implicit in that Hebrew word. It just means to draw near. A thing that would draw near. Something that would draw near. So an offering is understood as a Jewish individual would understand under the law. It's something that brings me near to God. Right? So it's voluntary, and this offering is Corban, and it's what is going to bring you near. You shall bring your offering of the animals from the herd of the flock, and it's going to go on talking about the birds as well. And it's got to be without defect. So this is going to be something that's going to be highly prized by the owner, the possessor. It's not something that's, you know, going to be, well, we'll kick this out. It says not so good. This one's got a few bruises and broken leg. There you go. So you can see why what they were supposed to do under law, and then you can read in the rest of the Old Testament when they were bringing all those lame and blind and injured animals, how hot the Lord would be. He's saying, you're trying to make this to where there's no cost involved. See, so when the Romans 12 says, present your bodies as a holy and living sacrifice, and this is your acceptable service, God's saying what? It's going to cost you something, isn't it? So service, sacrifice, and this is definitely a reference, Romans 12, to the burnt offering, right? This is going to cost you something. God wants you to understand it. This is going to cost. And so the real problem with a religious marketplace is they're trying to lower and discount the cost. See? And the way things are done out there in the religious marketplace. Oh, you don't have to do this, you don't have to, you know. Everything's, no, really, God doesn't expect you to do that, or, you know. It's all about discounting or lowering the cost of being a Christian. And God's trying to say, no, this is going to be something that's extremely valuable, and it's going to be an animal from your herd that's really a prized animal. And so he's saying, it's going to cost you, Christian, your life. Something you prize highly. Right? So, just some of the concepts we want to make sure we're getting as we do this. Verse 4. He shall lay his hand on the head of the burnt offering that it may be accepted for him to make atonement on his behalf. Now, when people read that, they say, well, atonement, that's got to do with sin. Well, we'll talk about that here in a minute. But the Hebrew word that talks about laying your hands on the head of the animal, that word has within itself the idea that you're not just going like a soft touch on the head. You know? It's like you're putting some weight behind that application of your hand. Like, there's some, as one individual I've heard say, there's some vigor behind that. There's like, I'm really going to push. You know, it's a definite identification with the animal and something's happening here. So, you're going to lay your hand on the head of the burnt offering that may be offered for him, acceptable for him, before God to make atonement. Now, this would just be an understanding by the offerer that his sin in general really separated him from God. And that could have been the end of it. God had every right to send him to wherever he had, or smoke him, do whatever. But because of God's mercy, this is a recognition that you have taken care of the issue that separated me from you. So this is just acknowledgement that without your intercession, God, without your mercy directed towards mine, I have this covering. So I'm grateful for the covering that I'm in covenant with you. Remember, that's what the word atonement means. Covering, satisfaction, expiation. Yeah. All right? It's just saying, thank you for what you've done. So I have this covering because of you, Lord. I have this well-being. So consecration. If I wouldn't have had my sin addressed, could I be consecrated? No. So it's just an acknowledgement that that had been done. Thank you. This is to make atonement for me. This is to say thank you that you have covered me. Alright? It's not in reference to a particular sin. We've proven that even pre-law, that that never had anything to do with sin. So the burnt offering does not have to do with sin. Okay? So you don't make a bargain with God if you're a Christian when you sin and say, well, I'll do this now. I'll offer up my body as a holy and living sacrifice now, even though I'm sinning. Again, it's not in reference to sin. It's an acknowledgement that you understand the valued position you now have through the grace and the mercy of God. Through the avenue that He's provided, the sacrifice that He's provided. He provided. You guys follow that? The Passover lamb. God made that available. He provided the avenue of escape, didn't He? It's recognition. Thank you for this sacrifice. And then the other thing is, when you take this highly prized animal, lay your hand on it, you're basically saying to God and to yourself and to the priest, everybody's watching you, I'm giving this animal totally to God. He can do with it as He pleases. So what does God do? He has them slay it. The only thing, by the way, that the priest got out of a burnt offering is they had the rights to the hide, and that's in Leviticus 7. You can check it out. But they would get the hide. Everything else went to God. Now, some people in our culture today would say, well, that's a waste. Why didn't God take and give it? You know, hey, you gave it wholly to God. It's not a waste. You're saying, I owe this to God. In volition, I am willing to give this to God. So if we have a proper understanding of what's been done for us through Christ Jesus, should we have a problem offering our bodies as a holy and living sacrifice? See, this was just saying to the Israelite, a reminder to them, wow, so, you know, all the things involved would come out of it. It talked about everything. It's just an understanding that God made these things available and possible for them. And so they're going to bring it and offer it. And it would be accepted. I'm accepted. Thank you, Lord. I'm accepted. Any questions? I'm going to come back to Justin first.
Just refresh my memory. I was thinking about this as you're talking about the prize sacrifice and the preparation of that. I didn't recall reading that like specifically. I know that I've helped people get their prize bowls ready for auctions, and basically you have to tranquilize them and burn some of the hide off them because you can't get them clean in order to get them looking good. And then give them straw to bed in. Was there anything specifically talking about them being that clean as that prize, or they just didn't have any defects?
No defects. That was the key. Yeah. Mr. Wilson?
I just was thinking about what you were saying in terms of the Romans 12, too. You know, with that burnt offering, we're telling the Lord, thank you. And we're also telling Him that I'm yours and you do what you want with me. You do want, you know, so if you're James, the brother of John, and you're supposed to be put to death with a sword, He's the Lord's to do what He will. If you're, you know, if you are Peter and you get rescued and you have still work to do, you're the Lord's to do what the Lord wants to do with you. So just, I think, a reminder for us in that yes, it's a thank you. It's also a recognition. Lord, I'm yours.
I believe he purchased us. That's what it says. Yeah. Same concept. He purchased Israel through the Passover lamb, and the burnt offering was a recognition. They've been purchased by God, redeemed. Okay? So that's really what that sacrifice is all about. Now, and again, it goes through what they would offer based upon what they had available to offer the individual. But again, it's voluntary. This is not the burnt offerings under the law and for the general congregational purposes of morning offering and evening offering, two on the Sabbath day, burnt offering required on the feast days. All this you'll go through and see. We read Leviticus 23. See, they were required as part of that process. This, brethren, is talking to the individual. That's why it has bearing on us and it has bearing about what Christ did. Christ willingly offered himself up, didn't he? I willingly offer myself up for your purposes. And Luke just touched on it, about a half a step ahead of me, but that's what we do. We're offering ourselves up for God's purposes. And this is a recognition of that. So I want to make sure I've covered all the things I wanted to do. All right. So that's the burnt offering. Now let's take a look at a few of the passages, shall we? Just about the burnt offering. I mentioned some of them. Now we're going to actually look at them. Just take a couple minutes here before we close. All right, let's look at Exodus 20. See where this was used. We covered a couple of them. Exodus 10. That was just cattle to come out when Moses said we need these animals to go and offer burnt offerings. When he's approaching Pharaoh in Exodus 10, that was one of the places, but for the sake of time, we won't read that. But again, it had nothing to do with sin. He's just saying, we've got to go out and offer burnt offerings to our Lord. Thank him for being our God and for us being his people. Exodus 18, Jethro. For some of us that are old enough and were influenced by television in the 60s, he's not a hillbilly. Well, he might have been from the hills of Midian. I don't know, but anyway, Exodus 18, verse 11. This is when Jethro brings Moses' wife and his two boys to meet him. But we'll pick it up in verse 11. Verse after they've been delivered. He says, now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. This is Jethro speaking. Indeed, it was proven when they dealt proudly against people. Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law before God. So they offered up a burnt offering, and it appears they had a meal. Yeah. That's there. Exodus 20. Slide over there real quick. We're in the neighborhood. You shall make an altar, in verse 24, of earth for me, and you shall sacrifice on it your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep and your oxen. In every place where I cause my name to be remembered, I will come to you and bless you. So you can see that's a blessing. Right? Exodus 32. This is the golden calf caper. People tear off their rings. And of course, Aaron's story is, well, we threw it into the fire and out came this calf. It's amazing the stories people will tell, isn't it? To cover improper behavior. All right. So it says he took it from him, fashioned a calf in verse 4. This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. Now when Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord. Now remember, he thinks it's golden calf and everything's going to be okay with the Lord. So the next day they rose early and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play. who are they really offering this burnt offering to? Calf. So this isn't a good representation. What I'm showing is, what were they saying? Oh, this is your God. And the burnt offering goes to that God. Are you with me? Make sense? Do you see that? I see some heads nodding. I see some not. Do you get that? Does everybody understand that? Okay. All right. It's not a good use. I'm just showing where it's used. Again, why was it done? In recognition of who delivered them. That's the principal present here. Okay? I just want to make sure you guys get that. All right. Exodus 29. Let's click back a couple of chapters. These are sacrifices under the law. Excuse me. We covered this earlier when we talked about the consecration of the altar. 7 days in verse 37 shall make atonement for the altar and consecrate it, then the altar shall be most holy. And I asked you guys a question, how many ever saw that before? And whatever touches the altar shall be holy. Now this is what you shall offer on the altar. This is just what they do. Congregationally, we'll say. 2 one-year-old lambs each day continuously. One lamb you shall offer in the morning, the other lamb you shall offer at twilight, evening time, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And there shall be 1/10 of an ephah, and he goes on and lines that out. There's the offering I was telling you about in the law, where they would do the burnt offering of the lamb in the morning and the evening, and this is kind of a congregational thing, community thing. The other one in Leviticus 1 is dealing with individuals. I just want you to see the difference. Okay? So there's congregational and there's individual. They would order every Sabbath. You can go in Numbers 28. 2 of them. Morning, 2 of them. Evening. New moon. The 3 feast days. The Day of Atonement. All those. Numbers 28 is going to cover the double offerings morning and evening on the Sabbath. That's going to be in Numbers 28, 9 through 10. And then if you pick it up in verses 11 through 29, it's going to line out the feast and the burnt offering there. And you'll see the order of things in there again, brethren. How things are handled. Then there would be offerings on fall on special occasions. Consecration of priests. We talked about the lepers. Okay. Purification of women after having a baby. Accidental breach of a Nazarite vow or at its conclusion, it would be offered. Okay? And the burnt offering was always to be a male animal. Well, I just said the male lamb is where I wanted you to see that. Right? All right, let me see. They offered, okay, here's the burnt offering. I'm going to try and give you a little summary here. Hopefully this will help. We know it's not to atone for sins. We know it's not. Even though that word atonement is used, they're covering. And you already have a covering over them. Right? Rather than the offering of the burnt offering symbolized surrender, it's the idea of what we get in Romans 12, and God's acceptance of surrender, therefore, you have this constant renewal that's going on. Alright? It prefigured in the Christ and in the believer the idea that we, Jesus, He Himself, offered himself willingly without spot to God to perform his will. With joy, we do the same thing. We offer ourselves without spot. All right? Remember, now people say, how am I going to quit sinning? You will quit sinning when you start understanding who you are and offering your body in service to God with joy. As a byproduct, you will not sin. If you do it grudgingly, if you do it with an attitude towards God or towards one another, not going to happen. But if you do it with joy, without any reference to what anybody else is doing or done to you, be done properly. So the offering is a sweet fragrance to God. And that's something that the propitiatory or the propitiatory offerings did not have. They could never mix in anything that would rise and make it become a fragrant aroma. Again, know who you are. Know why you offer your body up. Know what you're acknowledging. I mean, just over and over. This burnt offering. It's what Jesus did. Jesus could have focused on the fact that I am here because these stinking sinners. You see the attitude? I have to go through this. I have to put up with these guys. I have to put up with my brother and sister in the Israelite community to do this for them. You know, what was his attitude? I'll happily do it for you, Lord. Because I'm accomplishing your purpose. How about us? I'll happily do it for you, Lord. I don't care what's going on with everybody else. Or maybe what they've done to me. Irrelevant. I'll do it for you, Lord.